Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we open with updates on the war in the Ukraine, including impacts on the Russian economy as stiff sanctions take effect, arms shipments to aid the Ukrainians in fighting back, the latest on Russia's military offensive, NATO's activation of defensive forces, including U.S. warplanes to protect European allies, and Russian President Vladimir Putin's activation of his country's nuclear defense system. Then, we'll take you to the scene of vigils held by local Ukrainian Americans in Santee and San Diego as they pray for peace and speak out to plead for more help to save their homeland. California will be lifting school mask mandates starting March 12th, along with other West Coast states, but counties and individual school districts may extend those mandates in areas with high COVID-19 hospitalization rates, and that includes San Diego County. Tensions have been running high in Lemon Grove over a clash between an outspoken council member, Liana LeBaron, and Mayor Raquel Vasquez, who abruptly adjourned a meeting recently due to the conflict, and we'll have excerpts from that contentious session on today's show. San Diego County supervisors have passed a working families ordinance impacting construction projects on county lands. Hear who supported and opposed the measure and why on today's show. CalMatters reports that black people in California have the lowest COVID-19 vaccination rate in the state and among the highest death rates. Learn more about this troubling situation on today's show. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, in response to inquiries on how people can donate to help Ukrainians amid their crisis, on our People Power report today, we'll have information for you on some reputable charitable organizations that are getting involved to provide aid for the people of Ukraine, including Ukrainian refugees. On Crime Beat, we'll have details about a Spring Valley man who pleaded guilty to a hit-and-run accident in La Mesa that killed a college student. Then, hear about a new safe gun storage law adopted by county supervisors, which is now in effect, and we'll tell you what you need to know. Then, from California News Service, learn about efforts to create a helpline for parents and young people. Now, if you'd like to volunteer to help people facing traumatic situations in our region, we'll have information today on how you can attend a training session to join our region's Trauma Intervention Program, or TIP. Then, on the Yonder Report from Public News Service, we'll have news from rural America, including a drop in COVID-19 rates, efforts to help rural teens across college access college funding, and tax tips for rural residents. And finally, on our bookshelf segment today, we'll be re-airing a past interview with Matt Palomari, author of Land Without Evil. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with the latest updates on the war in Ukraine, a crisis that has captivated attention around the world and drawn near-universal condemnation of Russia for launching the unprovoked invasion in violation of international law. CNN reports that Russia is facing a financial meltdown due to crushing impacts of new Western sanctions imposed over the weekend and some earlier. The ruble, Russia's currency, fell 40% at one point Monday morning, while interest rates shot to an all-time high of 20% in Russia, and savers rushed to withdraw money out of banks in Russia as well as European subsidies of Russia's biggest bank. The ruble also lost 25% of its value compared to the dollar, CNN reports. The Biden administration announced stiff sanctions against Russia's central bank on Monday, prohibiting Americans from doing any business with the bank, and froze its assets in the U.S. as well. The new sanctions also target the National Wealth Fund of the Russian Federation and its Ministry of Finance. In addition, the U.S. on Saturday, along with the European Union, Canada, and the United Kingdom, announced expulsion of some Russian banks from SWIFT, a global financial messaging service, in an aim to paralyze assets of Russia's central bank. EU President Ursula von der Leyen said Sunday the aim is to ban the transactions of Russia's central bank and freeze all its assets to prevent it from financing Putin's war, a reference to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Though Russia has been building up a war chest over several years of some $630 billion in international reserves, including cash and gold, much of those assets are now frozen by the unprecedented sanctions. Sberbank, the European subsidiary of Russia's biggest lender, lost 70% of its shares on the London Stock Exchange Monday, while other Russian companies also saw values fall. NASDAQ suspended trading of key Russian stocks on Monday. Sanctions have also targeted Russian oligarchs, the billionaire backers and cronies of Putin. For the first time in history, the EU and some member nations, including even the normally pacifist nation of Sweden, have approved sending arms to a nation at war. Ukraine, though not an EU member, is receiving weapons, including anti-tank weapons, assault rifles, food rations, and protective gear. NATO, the North American Treaty Organization, has activated forces to defend NATO nations, meanwhile, in the event Russia's military aggression should advance to other nations that are NATO members, which the Ukraine is not. Under the NATO alliance, an attack on one nation is considered an attack on all. Newsweek reports that the Pentagon has responded to its NATO commitment by sending B-52 bombers, now patrolling the skies over Eastern European Allied territory. Putin responded ominously by ordering Russia's nuclear defensive systems to be put on full alert. In other major actions, the European Union has banned Russian airplanes, including oligarchs' aircraft, from flying over their airspace. The EU has also banned Russian media outlets RT and Sputnik from broadcasting in the EU. After days of shelling major cities in the Ukraine, including Kyiv and Kharkiv, Russian troops have encircled Kyiv, leading the Pentagon to voice concerns about an escalation of siege tactics. Russia is also accused of using suspected cluster bombs, which are illegal under international law, The Washington Post reports. Despite heavy bombings and street fighting, both cities remain in Ukrainian hands as of our show taping deadline. Representatives from Russia and the Ukraine met near the Belarus border on Monday for peace talks, which ended with no action, but a pledge to continue talks later. The Ukrainians have fought back fiercely against the invasion, claiming to have killed 4,500 Russian invaders. Russia has not released any casualty figures. The Ukrainian government also says it has suffered at least 352 deaths and over 1,600 injuries of civilians, but those numbers are unconfirmed. A Ukrainian brewery called Pravda in Lviv has announced on social media that it's converted from making beer to producing bottle bombs or Molotov cocktails, improvised explosive devices, and it's asking for donations to fund the cause. The prosecutor's office with the International Criminal Court announced Monday that it is opening an investigation into alleged war crimes committed by Russia in the Ukraine. Ukraine is inviting anybody who wants to come join the fight to do so, promising arms. And the Ministry of Defense in Ukraine is now offering Russian soldiers 5 million rubles, the equivalent of about $47 million, plus full amnesty if they will put down their guns and voluntarily surrender to start a new life in the Ukraine. Ukraine claims the money has been donated by IT companies, although this is not yet confirmed. But several large IT companies have taken steps to reduce Russia's influence on social media platforms. The Washington Post reports that Facebook, Google, YouTube, Twitter, and Microsoft over the weekend all announced plans to halt or restrict Russian state media propaganda, with plans ranging from bans on apps to labeling propaganda posts.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Next up, we have a special report on local Ukrainian Americans speaking out on the Russian invasion of the Ukraine. And we should add that this was recorded before the latest round of sanctions were imposed by the U.S. and the European Union.
On February 24th, Russia invaded the sovereign nation of Ukraine, bombing Ukrainian cities and sending tanks rolling in. The act of war has prompted fierce resistance, with Ukrainians fighting to protect their country from the invaders. The war has left many people displaced from their homes, wounded or killed, also bringing anguish to the Ukrainians around the world. On Thursday night, February 24th, local Ukrainian immigrants gathered in Santee to hold a prayer vigil in a vacant lot where there are plans to build a Ukrainian Catholic church.
Help us, O God, our Savior, and deliver the land of Ukraine for the sake of the glory of your name, that the enemy may not to say their God has forsaken them, and there is none to deliver and save them. But let every nation understand that you are our God, and we your people. are always protected under your dominion.
That was Father Yuri Sass of the St. John the Baptizer Catholic Church in San Diego, leading the gathered group in prayer and song, asking for God to protect the people in the Ukraine while the unprovoked war was in its early stages. The group brought both American flags and Ukrainian flags, as one woman, Nadia Scope, explained.
So you asked me why I'm holding the United States flag?
Yeah.
I said, I'm holding the United States flag because I love my country, I love America, but I also love my native Ukraine equally.
Like her, many are frustrated with the response of the world leaders for only using sanctions to hold Russia and her leader, President Vladimir Putin, accountable, as Nadia explained.
Oh, I just said, I can't believe this is happening in the 21st century to a sovereign free country by a lunatic madman, like a mad scientist.
Yeah, it's quite unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Like, I was seeing the news the weeks beforehand with the troops gathering and stuff.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he makes his move.
Yes. You know, you kind of see it coming, and then when it happens, it's like, what?
It is. What was your first reaction when you heard?
Shock.
Shock.
Shock. Shock, and then heartbreak.
Like, how do you feel about the sanctions that the U.S. is putting on?
Stupidly weak. They're nothing. They're nothing. There's a lot more they could have done. It's a weak administration, and that's what Putin took advantage of. Strictly political decision. So time will tell.
There are others who are stranded here. I met one Ukrainian woman who explained because of the war, she could not return back to her home. There are those who worry about their friends and family. Vasya, Father Yuri's wife, has her parents in the town of Ivano-Frankivsk, where the airport was bombed 2 miles away from their home. After the bombing, their neighbor asked to use their basement as a shelter, fearing the worst. That solemn singing you just heard was the voices of local Ukrainians gathered in Balboa Park this past Friday in yet another visual, while on the other side of the world, their capital city of Kyiv was under siege by the invading Russian army. Many thought that the city would not last the night, but the brave Ukrainians, including the military and civilians who have taken up arms, are fighting back and still hold the city in an act of defiance to Russian President Putin. Local San Diegans also joined the vigil in solidarity with the Ukrainians as they pleaded for governments to put an end to the war. Their plea was heard not just here in San Diego, but in cities across the globe Friday night. A world standing in solidarity with a nation under siege. Since those rallies here and around the world, NATO has for the first time ever authorized weapon sales to a nation at war, with Germany and Sweden first to send weapons to Ukraine. Supplies sent to the brave souls fighting in the Ukraine include anti-tank and anti-aircraft weapons. The European Union and Canada have banned Russian planes from their airspace. Meanwhile, economic sanctions imposed by the US and our European allies are poised to cripple the Russian economy. There are also symbolic actions of protests around the world, such as retailers pulling Russian vodka off shelves. Putin has responded to Western nations' actions by putting Russia's nuclear defense system on high alert, further escalating tensions between the Western world and Russia. This has been Matthew Minosh with the East County Magazine on KNSJ, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. Governor Gavin Newsom on Monday announced that California will lift requirements for students and staff to wear masks indoors at schools starting March 12th. Face coverings will remain strongly recommended, but not mandated. However, individual school districts and counties will have the option to keep local mask requirements if they deem the restrictions necessary. Now, that announcement follows Friday's change in guidance from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, where the new standards rely on COVID hospital numbers to govern whether masks should be worn. But those new standards, while resulting in mask recommendations being lifted for most of the nation, still classified San Diego County as having high virus activity and urged that people here continue to wear masks. So it's far from clear whether county supervisors may opt to keep the school mask mandate in place until those hospitalization levels drop. Starting Tuesday, March 1st, the state will also lift its requirement for unvaccinated Californians to wear masks in most indoor settings, though masks will be strongly recommended for everybody inside. Masks will also continue to be required for everyone at settings including healthcare facilities, transit centers, airports, public transit, correctional facilities, and homeless shelters, as well as long-term care facilities such as nursing homes. Governor Newsom, in a statement, said California continues to adjust our policies based on the latest data and science, applying what we've learned over the past 2 years to guide our response to the pandemic. He adds, masks are an effective tool to minimize spread of the virus and future variants, especially when transmission rates are high. We cannot predict the future of the virus, but we are better prepared for it, and will continue to take measures rooted in science to keep California moving forward. The governors of Oregon and Washington joined Governor Newsom in Monday's announcement, ending the mandate for the entire West Coast starting March 12th, except in any counties or school districts that may choose to retain the restrictions.
Lemon Grove Mayor Raquel Vasquez adjourned the city council meeting on Tuesday, February 15th, after just 1 hour, and rescheduled it for later in the week. The context for the early ending was a one-year lease agreement with the Urban League of San Diego County to extend programming to Lemon Grove. Councilmember Liana LeBaron wanted to know through what process the Urban League lease was allowed to be put on the agenda, and if that procedure was therefore the same for other organizations to follow. City Manager Lydia Romero explained that it came out of her discussions with the Urban League and the approval of the mayor. The ensuing back and forth eventually led to the meeting's adjournment.
And I'll bring back over to Councilmember Gesso.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to persist in my question being answered because it was never answered.
Councilmember LeBaron, you are out of order.
Ma'am, do you realize that you're in violation of our policies and procedures with not letting a council member ask their two questions and receive adequate answer? And actually, not only did I not receive adequate answer, I didn't receive an answer, period. What is your reason for not allowing me to ask my questions as granted to me per the policies and procedures that were voted in 2021?
Councilmember LeBaron,
ma'am, my question remains. Does it give you the authority to stop a council member from asking their two questions?
I'll turn this over to Councilmember Gessler. Thank you.
Ma'am, I did not receive an answer to my question.
Councilmember LeBaron, you're out of order. I'll turn this over to Councilmember.
No, ma'am, you are in violation of our policies and procedures. I asked one question and I was not allowed to get an answer because you interrupted me, which is in direct violation of the Lemon Grove Municipal Code and the policies and procedures that we have adopted as of 2021. My question remains to you, Madam Mayor. What is it that allows you to break the policies and procedures that were voted into effect last year?
The mayor is the presiding officer. It is her prerogative.
So Councilmember Jerry Jones just stated that it's the prerogative of the mayor to violate the policies and procedures. I just want to let all of us know that he said that because I find that to be something that's extremely odd. Policies and procedures are put into place for a reason, and as all the four of you harp on, these policies and procedures were meant to keep order. I'm being adamant in that we actually follow the policies and procedures. Allow me to ask my two questions and allow me to receive the answers to those two questions. But for some reason, you're determined to not let me get answers to simple questions.
I move that we accept staff's recommendations and approve the contract.
Do we have a second?
Your council members are voting to break the policies and procedures, not allow the city manager to answer my question that has to do with business practices and how tax dollars are being spent.
Aye.
Councilmember Gaskell?
Aye.
Councilmember LeBaron? Councilmember LeBaron, thankfully we have lots of media present. Thankfully there's lots of people present. Thankfully they're able to see exactly what's happening. I'm asking a very simple question that has to do with business practices. And your council colleague, my council colleagues are determined to stop that.
Do you vote yes or no? That's all we need to know.
My vote is no.
Yes.
4-1 to approve adopting a resolution with for a lease agreement with the Urban League of San Diego County.
Thank you so very much.
Wait, hold on. That was a motion, actually, wasn't it, to close the hearing?
To approve the application for local assistance specified grant. And so I'll turn this over to Mike James, Assistant City Manager and Public Works Director, to present the staff report.
As a point of order, I just want to say that that is completely unacceptable what just happened. And actually, there's multiple...
Councilmember LeBaron is out of control, and she's out of order, and she's wasting our time.
Okay.
She's wasting city time, and she's wasting your time. And so, if you cannot control yourself, then we are going to have to adjourn this.
I'm just completely appalled at the extent that we have four politicians who are determined to... to break policies and procedures, to keep the public in the dark as though they're ignorant and don't deserve to know what's going on in their city. I'm just utterly appalled, completely appalled by your behavior. But I'm very thankful that there's media here present so that everybody can see with their own two eyes.
This meeting will be adjourned until a date specified. Thank you.
When conducting the city's business resumed 2 days later, similar tensions were evident. However, a motion was successfully passed by a 3-1 vote approving two state-funded bathroom projects, one at Berry Street Park and one at Washington Street Park. The projects will uplift two of the city's most popular parks with a public restroom revamp many say is long overdue. Checking off capital improvement projects like this one in Lemon Grove often requires picking and choosing around budget restrictions. However, the new bathrooms will be one less burden to worry about, thanks to a state grant from Assemblymember Akilah Weber's office for up to $400,000. Councilmember Jerry Jones was unable to attend, and Councilmember LeBaron was the sole no vote. She remained unconvinced that the process of receiving the state money was a benefit to Lemon Grove's taxpayers, and she questioned why the search for a lower rate was not more highly prioritized. With the motion carrying, staff will now work on finalizing the design and construction elements of the projects. The window for being reimbursed by the state grant closes in June of 2024. The next City Council meeting is on March 1st at 6 p.m., held in the Community Center at 3146 School Lane. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. Welcome to Job Talk, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
By a 3-2 vote, San Diego County Supervisors approved the Working Families Ordinance on February 8th. The measure requires payment of prevailing wages and use of a skilled, trained workforce on construction projects over $1 million on county lands. It also brings sick leave requirements in line with state standards. A second reading is set for March 1st. If approved then, it will go into effect 30 days later on new contracts or projects up for renewal. The measure was first introduced by Supervisors Tara Lawson Rummer and Chair Nathan Fletcher in July 2021. They voted in favor, along with Nora Vargas, to pass the measure, which was opposed by Supervisors Joel Anderson and Jim Desmond. Fletcher and Lawson Remmer issued a statement after the vote. It reads in part, Today, the county took action to ensure that public lands yield public benefits. With the passage of the Working Families Ordinance, we voted to guarantee adequate workplace protections in alignment with state policy and regional needs. Today's action will reduce working poverty and promote economic sustainability for families throughout our region. Supervisor Anderson also issued a statement on his opposition to the measure. He said, "The land near Gillespie Airport is surrounded by some of the poorest areas in my district and San Diego County. These people have endured loss of work due to COVID, supply chain difficulties, and now the county's proposed ordinance. After reading all three economic impact studies, I cannot support this ordinance. I am not willing to sacrifice long-term careers for the sake of short-term jobs." The staff report indicates that staff engaged stakeholders for feedback, reaching out to over 882 businesses and community members. The report acknowledges that some stakeholders are small businesses in disadvantaged communities, adding, "The burden of increased costs due to implementing a wage floor and increased benefit costs may cause some businesses to close or relocate off-county-owned property. This could result in the unintended consequence of employees being laid off, which could potentially have a disproportionate impact on low-income and/or Black and Indigenous people of color." On the other hand, the report found, if the businesses were able to pay the wage floor and associated benefits, this could increase the standard of living for those same low-wage earners and employees or workers of color. Supervisors opted against adopting a wage floor for now, until more stakeholder input is gathered specifically on that issue. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
CalMatters reports that African Americans have the lowest vaccination rate in our state at 55%. Ironically, COVID-19 has become deadlier for Black Californians since the widespread availability of vaccinations and vaccine hesitancy could be among the reasons why. Other races, which have higher vaccination rates, have seen death rates rise, but not as dramatically. A CalMatters analysis shows that since last summer, the rate of Black Californians dying from COVID-19 has increased tenfold, from one death per 100,000 people last July to 10.4 deaths this week. That surpasses Latinos and all races, except Pacific Islanders, who are dying at the rate of 14.7 per 100,000, according to state data. And while statewide deaths from COVID have declined in the past week, they have continued to rise for African Americans. Ironically, in an era that's seen national outrage over fatal police shootings of Black people, far more have died of COVID-19. So far, 5,544 Black people have died from the virus in California. DeAndre Moore rolled up his sleeve recently outside a community church in Oakland to get his first COVID-19 shot. He was the last in his family to get vaccinated after putting it off for more than a year, and only acquiesced because he wants to be in the delivery room when his son is born this summer. The 35-year-old African-American man knows multiple people who have contracted COVID-19 and died. He wears a mask and doesn't go out much, but he was suspicious of the vaccine and doesn't trust the government. Factors that may be driving the low rate of vaccinations and high death rates from COVID-19 among Blacks may include poverty, lack of insurance, distrust of the health care system, and higher rates of health complications like diabetes or heart disease. Another problem is that pulse oximeters, used to determine if a patient needs supplemental oxygen, don't work as well on patients with dark skin. It isn't only adults being impacted by these disparities. Black children in California are the second most likely to die from the virus among Californians younger than 18, with 1.2 deaths per 100,000 Black children. Pacific Islanders are twice as likely to die from COVID as Black children, while all other races have less than one COVID-19 death per 100,000 children. Early in the pandemic, Latinos also had low vaccination rates, but a major outreach campaign has led to substantial gains. After high rates of deaths among Latinos early on, the death rate among Latinos from COVID have dropped from 25 deaths per 100,000 people in January 2021 to just one death per 100,000 6 months later. While that's risen with the Omicron surge over the last month, the California Department of Public Health estimates 7.2 Latinos died of COVID per 100,000 people, lower than the statewide rate of 8 per 100,000. Around June 2021, the percentage of fully vaccinated Latinos outstripped Blacks and Native Americans, leaving Blacks in last place. Only 57% of Latinos are fully vaccinated, but some hard-hit agricultural areas like Imperial County were quick to accept the vaccine, and it has made a difference. Eduardo Garcia, senior policy manager for the Latino Community Foundation, said high death rates among Latinos early in the pandemic galvanized local groups and clinics to dole out vaccines and combat misinformation. Over 34,000 California Latinos have died since the beginning of the pandemic, Garcia said. It touched people close to home. I think that also created an impulse for people to get information from reliable sources and get the vaccine. Refocusing COVID-19 vaccination messaging on preventing deaths rather than infections is one way to get people to trust in the vaccine. Another way to boost vaccination rates is to bring pop-up clinics to churches, schools, and neighborhoods where vaccination rates are low. Governor Gavin Newsom's recent announcement that California would be moving into a new phase of the pandemic worries some community health organizers. The new state action plan acknowledges continuing disparities when it comes to COVID-19 deaths and highlights money in Newsom's budget that includes $819 million to expand Medi-Cal to undocumented individuals next year, $1.7 billion to invest in a more diverse healthcare workforce over 5 years. The plan offers no specific programs to help Black communities. The state health department has, however, announced new $27 million contracts would be awarded to more than 100 community-based health organizations to shore up vaccination efforts in underserved communities, including African American ones. However, community advocates worry that rhetoric used by Newsom, like turning the page on the pandemic, will ultimately prevent groups that have never caught up from moving forward. And it's important to note that according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, San Diego County is among the communities where the COVID transmission rate is still high. Carla Thomas, policy director for the UCLA Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander COVID-19 Data Policy Lab, says, "We still have growing death rates and case rates. How can we move forward in the pandemic when we're still suffering?" Throughout the pandemic, Pacific Islanders have been hit the hardest by COVID-19. Their mortality rate is nearly twice that of the statewide rate. While data suggests that Pacific Islanders are nearly 100% vaccinated, Thomas says there is reason to believe that the state's numbers are inaccurate. She says she is one of only two people in her 50-person Samoan church in San Bernardino that she knows is vaccinated. It's not uncommon for there to be more than two funerals a month in her community. She voices concern that not enough is being done to mitigate the pandemic among Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander communities and other communities of color. Thomas opposes the recent lifting of the state's mask mandate and the governor's endemic plan. Dr. Kim Rhodes, an associate professor of epidemiology at the University of California, San Francisco, says a pandemic is not over for people who aren't vaccinated or who don't have regular health care. Earlier this month, Rhodes and more than 35 organizations sent a letter to the state health department, in part criticizing the state's inconsistent and confusing messaging on masking. The health department's initial criteria for lifting the indoor mask mandate included vaccination and infection rates that were unmet when the mandate expired. Rhodes said that this erodes public trust in government and scientific organizations, particularly among groups that place little faith in the institutions to begin with. In response, the department agreed to schedule a meeting between Rhodes and State Public Health Officer Dr. Thomas Aragon. In response to Cal Matters, the State Health Department says vaccine equity is the North Star of its efforts to reach marginalized communities and that it will continue to partner with community organizations, ethnic media, translators, and faith-based groups. In Oakland at the Umoja Clinic last week, George Dowell, a 40-year-old African-American, said he was getting his second vaccination dose because he didn't want to be left behind as more and more businesses require proof of vaccination for entry. Dowell is among the age group experiencing higher death rates. He spent the past year watching vaccinated friends and family carefully for side effects before deciding to get the shot himself. Social media and misinformation played a role in Dowell's hesitation. I was listening to certain people, social media, instead of listening to myself and doing what's right, he told Cal Matters. 3 weeks ago, he decided it was time. He found the Umoja Clinic while driving around the neighborhood and got his first Pfizer shot. Dowell wanted to show his school-aged nieces and nephews that there was nothing to be afraid of as they became eligible for the vaccine. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We will fight as long as it takes to liberate the country. If children are born in shelters, even when the shelling continues, then the enemy has no chance in this undoubtedly people's war.
Speaking through a translator, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky defied what he called brutal Russia's attacks. But he also said they'll give long-shot peace talks at the Belarus border a chance. At least 350 civilians in Ukraine have been killed since the invasion began Thursday. As of last night, stiff Ukrainian resistance had repeatedly repelled Russian attempts to take the capital Kiev and other large cities amid intense shelling and rocket attacks. Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered his country's nuclear forces on high alert following what he called aggressive statements by NATO countries. The UN will hold an emergency session today that could allow for all 139 members to call for Russia's immediate withdrawal. It'll only be the 11th such meeting since 1950. Meanwhile, Ukraine asked the International Criminal Court in The Hague to impose reparations on Russia, accusing Moscow of planning genocide. Around the world, protests in support of Ukraine were held, including in Washington, D.C. Reports say more than 2,000 anti-war protesters have been arrested in Russia. Those charged could face heavy fines and jail time for protesting without a permit. Members of Congress are back in Washington this week, signaling bipartisan support of economic aid for Ukraine. Chair of the Senate Ukraine Caucus, Rob Portman of Ohio, told Cleveland rallygoers he'll meet with the Ukrainian ambassador to the UN today.
We're going to talk about the humanitarian aid that's needed to help to combat these cyber attacks, because this war has been going on for 8 years, to combat the disinformation that is flooding into Ukraine every single day, to ensure that we are tightening these sanctions.
Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee believes additional sanctions are also needed.
Putin has called this an operation, but it is not an operation. And all of the NATO allies who are freedom-loving, they have acknowledged that this is sheer brutality.
The Biden administration is expected to ask Congress for $6 billion in economic and military aid. Former President Donald Trump used his speech at this weekend's Conservative Political Action Conference in Florida as an opportunity to claim that the Russian invasion would never have occurred under his watch.
The problem is not that Putin is smart, which of course he's smart, but the real problem is that our leaders are dumb. Putin is playing Biden like a drum.
Trump teased a 2024 presidential run and later emerged as the clear winner in the conference's straw poll. Nearly 60% of those asked support Trump as the GOP nominee, while 28% support Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. We open the second half of our show today with some national news headlines from Public News Service.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report from East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. A humanitarian crisis is growing after Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. Over 100,000 Ukrainians have fled their homes, the United Nations estimates. The UN predicts the number of refugees could reach several million, and those remaining in the Ukraine face potential food shortages, medical needs for those injured, and damage to key buildings and infrastructure. California Attorney General Rob Bonta warns consumers that crises often bring out scammers, and he advises to be wary of fraudulent charities or those without experience. Some legitimate aid organizations are stepping up, fortunately, to help Ukrainians in their homeland as well as assist refugees. Here are several reputable, long-standing charities now providing aid for Ukrainians, where you can make a one-time or a recurring donation. The International Rescue Committee, or IRC, is now in Poland helping displaced families from the Ukraine. Your donation can help the IRC provide food, medical care, and emergency supplies to refugees. Save the Children has established a Ukraine Crisis Relief Fund to provide children and families with immediate aid such as food, water, hygiene kits, counseling, and cash. UNICEF is currently on the ground in eastern Ukraine, helping children with water, health, and education services in a region already hard hit first by COVID and now war. The International Committee of the Red Cross is supporting the Ukrainian Red Cross with food initiatives and repairing infrastructure, as well as helping hospitals, schools, mental health facilities, and community centers.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. 18-year-old Jock Joseph had dreams of going to medical school and was a student at the University of California, Riverside, when he was struck by a pickup truck a year ago. The driver fled the scene, leaving Jock injured alongside the road on Bancroft Drive in La Mesa on February 27, 2021. The young victim died a week later in a hospital. La Mesa police distributed surveillance videos to media and worked with Crime Stoppers to identify 62-year-old Scott Satterfield of Spring Valley as the suspect. He was arrested April 7, 2021, and charged with felony hit and run. The district attorney's office advises that Satterfield recently pleaded guilty to a count of hit and run causing death. He faces up to 4 years in prison when he is sentenced in April.
A safe gun storage ordinance took effect starting February 25th in San Diego County. It requires that all guns in homes or structures near a home be secured with a trigger lock or locked in a container. The only exception is if the firearm is within the immediate control of an authorized person. The ordinance applies to all unincorporated areas of San Diego County. Acting Sheriff Kelly Martinez says, "Gun locks are an important safety measure that can provide critical time between someone having an impulse and taking action." The San Diego Gun Owners Association has opposed safe gun storage measures, contending that they lengthen the time needed for a homeowner to defend themselves or family members in case of an intruder. The safe storage of guns was part of an ordinance passed in January that also regulates non-serialized firearms and non-serialized precursor firearm parts, commonly known as ghost guns. The measure takes aim at reducing the alarming number of deaths and injuries due to gun violence, including both violence by others and suicides. From 2015 to 2019, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, an average of 106 people were shot and killed every day in the United States. Another 210 people survived gunshot injuries each day. Out of more than 115,000 gun deaths every year in the United States, over 64,000 are suicides. More than 1,600 children and teens die of gunshots each year, on average, and 662 of those deaths of young people are suicides. The risk of suicide is double in homes where a firearm is kept loaded or unlocked, according to a Harvard University study. Nathan Fletcher, chairman of the County Board of Supervisors, says safe firearm storage saves lives and prevents gun violence. He calls the measure a common-sense solution to keep families safe, especially children. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
As National Parent Leadership Month draws to a close, advocates are calling on lawmakers who are writing the new state budget to fund programs that support families' emotional health. In January, Governor Gavin Newsom's budget proposal included $4.7 million to fund the Parents Anonymous Helpline, where trained counselors listen to parents and youths and link them to resources. Antonia Rios is a California mom who went to work for Parents Anonymous after benefiting firsthand from its counseling service.
The help, support, strength, and hope my children and I received changed our lives for the better. We are resilient. The circle of violence has been broken in my family.
Parents and youth can call the helpline at 855-4-A-PARENT or sign up for free weekly online support groups. The Parents Anonymous Helpline, run by the nonprofit Raising the Future, has answered more than 1.5 million calls since it was established in March 2019. Dr. Elizabeth Harris with Arizona State University co-authored a study in the journal Child and Health Services Review that found that the helpline and support groups are making a dent in child abuse and neglect.
And that evaluation showed that the program substantially reduced the number of parents who ended up in the child welfare system and the number of children who ended up in the child welfare system.
The group also helped lobby for an extension of COVID-related paid sick leave. The legislature has until June to approve the state budget. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
When trauma hits, it can come in the blink of an eye and can turn your life around like a tornado in a matter of seconds. Most do not know the steps to move forward from a crisis event, but locally, there are some kind-hearted people who volunteer to be by the side of victims. In collaboration with the Emergency Response System, Trauma Intervention Programs of San Diego, or TIP, provides immediate crisis intervention after a tragedy. Specially trained TIP volunteers provide care and support to citizens who have been traumatized or are in a state of crisis, providing service 365 days a year. Imagine witnessing a fatal car accident or having a loved one unexpectedly die. TIP volunteers will be requested by emergency responders to be by your side to help process what has impacted you and help you with the next steps. Last year, TIP served over 4,000 people in San Diego County. TIP volunteers are called by local police, fire, medical, and hospital personnel to respond to scenes of sudden or unexpected death from all causes, industrial accidents, sexual assaults, violent crimes, and other traumatic incidents to provide immediate emotional and practical support to families, friends, witnesses, and victims. Now, TIP is seeking compassionate individuals who have an aspiration to give back to their community. If you would like to consider becoming a TIP volunteer, you can sign up for the next training academy, which will be held on March 2nd in La Mesa. To register for the training or to get more information, you can visit tipsandiego.org or call 855-TIPSD-HELP. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Good news. COVID-19 cases continue their decline, a bit faster in urban areas. New infections in rural areas dropped more than 75% since their peak a month ago, says Tim Mirima, Daily Yonder editor.
Rural America was a little slower to succumb to the Omicron surge, so we're a little bit behind urban areas as the surge declines.
Rural community health centers say part of their success in providing COVID-19 vaccines has been taking clinical services to churches, schools, and factories. Dr. Susan Ward-Jones with the East Arkansas Family Health Center explains.
So I think even to this day, it's a one-on-one conversation with patients and why it's so important, in particular those that have comorbidities and chronic disease.
Community health center caregivers are traumatized themselves, notes Ann Gigliotti with Morehouse School of Medicine.
I know that they are tired and they've experienced a huge amount of loss. And despite that, they're still coming to work every day and caring for folks, caring for their neighbors.
Historically, the federal government has had multiple definitions for rural, making it difficult for rural serving institutions, known as RSIs, to receive funding to support college-bound rural kids.
How do you direct funding towards something that you haven't defined?
Reporter Nick Ferrizzo says defining rural just got a little easier. He credits the Alliance for Research on Regional Colleges for a new data tool that will help lawmakers better direct rural investment. RSIs tend to be smaller but more diverse. And according to new census numbers, even though rural America has lost population overall, diversity has grown, as well as the number of adults moving there. Zander Brown has more.
95% of the nation's rural counties were more racially and ethnically diverse in 2020. Though depopulation of the Great Plains remains consistent, the Northwest and Midwest saw more concentrated pockets of growth.
Counties that are growing in population numbers are also growing in diversity.
Sarah Malott, data journalist with the Daily Yonder, says the change is due largely to a growing adult Hispanic demographic.
90% of all rural counties in the U.S. would have lost population if it were not for Hispanic growth.
I'm Zander Brown.
$6,000 or more. That's what's at stake if Americans don't file a tax return this year. Pandemic-related changes to the Earned Income Tax Credit, EITC, mean more money is due to tax filers and more people are eligible.
That EITC at the end of the year is what lifts them out of poverty.
Jennifer Graybill is with Human Services in Carroll County, Maryland. She says in rural areas, $6,000 can make the difference between surviving and thriving.
For our families, it means this is the car that I can purchase to keep my job. This is how I get my rent caught up. This is how I literally survive for the next year.
For the Yonder Report and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
Next up, we'll be re-airing one of our Best of East County episodes, An Oldie But Goodie, our bookshelf interview with author Matt Palomari, the author of Land Without Evil.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Matt Palomari, local award-winning author of fiction and nonfiction. His novel, Land Without Evil, was adapted into a full-length stage and sky show and is the subject of a PBS series, Arts in Context. My guest is also editor-in-chief of Muse Harbor Publishing and longtime teacher at the Southern California Writers Conference. Welcome, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Land Without Evil is an historical novel about the first contact between shamans and Jesuits in 18th century South America. Can you tell us what inspired this book and your overall interest in shamanism and ancient cultures?
Yeah, I've always been fascinated with shamanism, and I took an honors course in anthropology at San Diego Mesa College, and I learned about the story of the Land Without Evil, which is about the first contact between the Jesuits and the Indians, but I told it from the Indians' point of view. So it really has the heart of shamanism in it. It's all about shamanistic beliefs and their conflicts with traditional Western culture. And when I read about the story of their migrations, which parallel the story of Exodus in the Bible with Moses.
Right.
I was fascinated that nobody had done that story. So I said, this has to be told. And so I got obsessed and I researched it for 2.5 years and I wrote it.
So that marked the beginning of your journey.
That journey, yes, because what I learned in the research with studying shamanism is the indigenous people of South America, which became my specialty. And so I eventually had to go down there and experience things directly. And I've been going down there now for 14 years.
You've also written a memoir, Spirit Matters, which details those journeys to Peru. How did the writing of your journey compare to creating a work of historical fiction?
Well, after studying shamanism and having some experiences with it, I had to go to the jungle and experience it directly, working with shamans, which I did.
Right.
And what happened is that my life started getting weirder than anything I could write about, being a fiction writer, as you are. And so I decided that my story was worth telling because of the things I was experiencing and getting a real perspective on shamanism that few people are lucky enough to get. So I brought it all together and had really amazing experiences. So I wrote Spirit Matters, which won the San Diego Book Award, I think it was in 2008.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. That was very gratifying. It's our lives are a story.
So how are these two books related to your latest book, which is neither a, a memoir nor a novel. Can you tell us about that book and how it fits into the overall trajectory of your writing and editing career?
Yeah, The Infinity Zone is nonfiction, and it's based on Perfect Form and Motion, which is based a lot on the works of Rudolf Steiner, who started the Waldorf schools. And the essence of The Infinity Zone is learning to master energy, which is what shamanism is all about. They call it the power path, because mm-hmm. you're learning to master yourself and all the energies around you and connecting with the energies of nature and all of those things. So the concepts of how energy works are the basis of The Infinity Zone. And I worked with Paul Mayberry, who's president of Grail Sports, and they have a device called the 8-board, which teaches you to perfect the motion of your body. He's a tennis pro. They use it for perfecting tennis strokes. Pitchers use it. Professional sports people use it. Golfers use it. And it's all about perfect form and motion, which is mastering the energies of your body. And that's what shamanism is about, is mastering energy on all levels.
So tennis is connected to shamanism.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The form and the motion of the figure eight, which is why it's called the Infinity Zone, gives you maximum power and efficiency with the least amount of effort. It's the perfect motion of the body.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, our time is up for today, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Matt Palomary and his work, please visit his website at www.mattpalomary.com. And again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.